Joining us on the line, Rabbi Daniel Bider. Very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Good to hear. So, leadership is obviously, it's a massive topic, and in the couple of minutes that we have, we're certainly not going to be able to really unpack all of it. But give us your sense of leadership at a time of COVID.
Well, I think one really important question to get to the bottom of is what makes a good leader and what makes a not particularly good leader. Is there one big question we can ask? Is there one way we can split the world of leadership into the good ones and the not such good ones? And as you say, it's a massive question, but I think we've got a bit of a blueprint, a bit of a guide from one or two of our traditional Jewish sources. So let me just jump back in time a few days when we read about a man called Pinchas. Now, Pinchas would not necessarily have been everyone's best friend. Without going into too much detail at all, Pinchas was somebody who did something which wasn't particularly, wouldn't have been particularly popular. He said that someone's done something very wrong here. Doesn't matter what it was. Someone's done something very wrong, and I need to rise to the challenge. I need to send out a strong message that this is something which is not okay, and I'm going to make a point. I'm not going to think about what anyone else, what anyone else's views are. This is what I believe in. So Pinchas actually is a template for belief, doing what you believe in, believing in something, and making that a very real part of your life. Now, let's put him on the side for the moment. I want to get back to this idea of, you know, what makes a good leader. There's a fascinating other source we have in a Mishnah. We have a Mishnah which tells us about what things will be like in the pre-Messianic era. And I thought of it a couple of days ago because the world which the Mishnah describes is a world which certainly in the times of the Mishnah would have appeared very upside down. It would have been a very counterintuitive, strange world. I was reminded of this a few days ago because I was waiting in a dentist's surgery and the dentist came out and he said, this is the first time in history when a dentist comes out to the waiting room and sees a whole waiting room full of dentists. Everything's upside down. What did he mean? He meant that everyone in the waiting room is wearing a mask, of course. So this source describes a world in which, could you believe it, young people are disrespectful to old people, and young people don't stand up when old people walk into the room. This would have been very strange. One of the things mentioned in this particular Mishnah is that the face of the generation will be like the face of a dog. And that's a very cryptic, enigmatic thing for a Mishnah to bring in, a Mishnah which is otherwise very easy to understand. And one explanation is that at some point in the future, in the distant future, the Mishnah was foreseeing a situation where generation is like the dog. What does that mean? So one explanation is as follows, that if you were an alien, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that you are, but if you were an alien and you came down to a park, James Nettle Park, and you saw people walking dogs, you'd get the impression that the dogs are walking the people. There are the dogs in front, guiding the people, taking the people wherever the dogs want to go. The dogs seem to be the leaders, and this is something foretold by the Mishnah about the times in which we actually live, whereby we've moved over from conviction politics to populist politics. People are not being led. People are getting together in the form of surveys, in the form of popular opinion, telling the leaders what ideas the leaders must represent, and then we will vote you in. In other words, gone are the days, almost, when leaders are saying, I believe in this, this is a really important belief, and this is something which I'd like to present to the country, because there's too much of this, the generation is like the dog leading the masters. It's all about what do the people want. I was reading about your South African history. I think the Nationalist Party in 1948 presented a plan to the people that if you vote for us, you'll get white bread. Now, did they really believe that white bread was a fundamental value? Was that part of the Dutch Reformed Church's belief system? I don't think so. But if you tell people, hey, if you vote for us, one thing you're going to get is white bread, they will vote for you if they like white bread because, hey, that's something they want. It's not something that you really believe in. The difference between conviction politics and populist politics, I think, is really what a lot of it comes down to. Because conviction politicians will often sit on the side for many years. Just to name a few that spring to mind, there's Nelson Mandela. Mm. There's Winston Churchill, if they can be quoted in the same sentence. Mm. There's Menachem Begin in Israel. These people were on the sidelines for many, many years. There was Nelson Mandela. I don't need to be on South African radio telling you about Nelson Mandela's story. Winston Churchill spent about 5 years in the 30s telling the British people that Germany is rearming and poses a danger and shouldn't be ignored. And he was ignored. He was ignored for many years until everyone realized he was right. The beauty of a conviction politician is that when people realize you're right, you're an obvious leader. You've got a real message that resonates with the people. You're not just giving them something that they want. You're giving them something that you believe in. You, when you speak, are articulating their very thoughts. They may not have tuned into you for many years. Menachem Begin in Israel, same story. this is what makes this. This I think is a real key to being a leader. Believing in what you're saying, presenting something you believe in to the people, and you'll be ignored potentially for many years, but that's fine. But when they realise who you are and that their beliefs coalesce are in line with yours. Oh my goodness, the passion with which you can speak about something you believe in is so different.
Because it's authentic. Because it's authentic. Exactly. And you've and you've lived it. There's no doubting your authenticity.
Exactly. One other very important point is that when you've done your job, you'll go. You won't stick around and be stale, which is also a sign of not very good leadership. So I think this is a really important paradigm to present in terms of what leadership's about. It's about believing in what you're saying and not wavering from that, not trying to be populist, not going for the short-term gain. Not giving the people what they want, telling them what you believe in, and if they want you, they'll choose you, and oh my goodness, you'll be a good leader.
Absolutely awesome. Time is 8:58. Rabbi Daniel Bader, thank you for your thoughts on that. I'd love your thoughts, 34519 or 0618951019. That is, if you are able to type fairly quickly.